This is one of a series of lectures using the studies of my God's Plan for Man book and my Bible chart. I am Finis Jennings Dake, and the subject of this lecture is The Woman and the Man-Child of Revelation 12. In this 12th chapter of Revelation, John said, I saw a woman clothed with the sun, standing upon the moon, upon her head a crown of 12 stars. She, being with child, cried, travailing in birth and pain to be delivered. There appeared another great wonder in heaven, a great red dragon having 7 heads and 10 horns. His tail drew the third part of the stars of heaven. The dragon stood before the woman to devour her child as soon as it was born. And in verse 5 we read, she brought forth a man-child who was to rule all nations with a rod of iron. And her child was caught up to God and to his throne. There are some other details we want to deal with also in connection with these two ideas, the woman and the man-child. First, as to the woman. The woman represents national Israel, not the church. The thing we must keep in mind in all of our studies of Revelation 4 through the 22nd chapters is this, that every dot over every I, every part of this whole section, from the 4th chapter, verse 1 on through the rest of the book, it deals with things which must be after the churches. We've emphasized that once or twice before, but it won't hurt us to emphasize it again. In chapter 1, verse 19, John was told, after he had seen a vision of Christ in the midst of the candlesticks, to write the vision which he had seen, which he did in chapter 1. And the second and third chapters of the book of Revelation consisted of letters to 7 churches in Asia Minor. And he was told in the second part of his book to write the things which are, that is, the things concerning the churches, which he wrote about in chapters 2 and 3. The third part of his book was to consist of things which must be after the churches. And to prove that after he had written the things concerning the churches in chapters 2 and 3, he was caught up to heaven in chapter 4, verse 1. And he was told, come up hither, I will show thee things which must be after the churches. All right, this woman and the man-child of Revelation 12 are right in the middle of these things which must be after the churches. Therefore, neither the woman nor the man-child could represent the church or could be represented at all by Christians of any kind. The idea is that every jot and tittle, every dot over an I, from the 4th chapter, verse 1 on through the rest of the book, concerns Israel. And it is the time of the fulfillment of Daniel's 70th week. The Antichrist will not be here until after the rapture of the church. And the church must be gone before even the first verse of the 4th chapter even begins to be fulfilled. That is, chapters 4 and 5, the things which he saw when he got up through the door in heaven, really were to happen after the rapture of the church, as well as were the seals, the trumpets, and the vials, and all the other events of the book of Revelation. So for anyone to bring anything concerning past history, even during the history of the church, before the rapture of the church, to bring one thing over here among those things which must be after the churches, that is entirely out of order and out of place. The woman of Revelation 12 is representative of Israel, not the church, not Christendom, not any group of Christians of any kind, but simply national Israel. In the 37th chapter of the book of Genesis, we read of Joseph dreaming that he saw the sun, the moon, and 11 stars bow down to him. Jacob interpreted that dream as referring to himself and his wives and his sons, Joseph being the 12th son. So when we find the same symbolism in the 12th chapter of Revelation, in the last book of the Bible that we find in the first book of the Bible, we can definitely conclude without any sting of the conscience that this woman represents the same as in Genesis 37, national Israel. There are many other things to prove that. What is said of this woman in this chapter, how that she flees into the wilderness, where she is protected of God for 3.5 years. And the very fact that the word wilderness is used time and again in the Old Testament days in connection with Israel and not once in connection with the church, this definitely proves that Israel is the woman referred to in Revelation 12. For example, in the 20th chapter of the book of Ezekiel, verses 33 to 44, the prophet Ezekiel saw a vision of Israel, and he pictured Israel as being gathered back from all nations to become a nation in the latter days, and that then, during her being made a nation again, that the wilderness experience as pictured in Revelation 12 would be literally fulfilled. He said, I will bring her into the wilderness, and I will bring her under the bond of the covenant, and I will plead with her face to face, like as I pled with your fathers when I brought them out of the land of Egypt. Thus we see Israel pictured as coming back from among the nations to become a nation in the latter days, and then during those latter day experiences in their own nation, that they would be driven into the wilderness as God dealt with them when he brought them up out of the land of Egypt. In the 16th chapter of the book of Isaiah, the first 5 verses, we read, Send ye the lamb to the ruler of the land from Selah unto the mount of the daughter of Zion, for it shall be as a wandering bird cast out of her nest, so the daughters of Moab shall be at the fords of Arnon. Let mine outcast dwell in thee, O Moab, be thou a cover to them from the face of the spoiler. Here we have another prophecy of Israel being defeated by the Antichrist, and Israel going into the wilderness country of Jordan for protection, and where God has a place prepared for to feed her and protect her for 3.5 years. Then in Hosea 2:14-18, God said, I will allure her, I will bring her into the wilderness of the people, and I will give her the valley of Achor for a door of hope, and she shall sing there as in the days of her youth. And I will bring her into the bond of the covenant. In other words, I will marry her again, like Hosea married his wife a second time. Then we read in this passage in Hosea, In that day you will no longer call me Balai, meaning my lord, but you will call me Ishi, meaning my husband. Also, this corresponds to the same idea as in the 24th chapter of Matthew, verses 15 and 16, where we read, When you therefore shall see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet, stand in the holy place, whoso readeth, let him understand. And let them which be in Judea flee into the mountains. Let them which are on the housetop not come down to take anything out of the house. Woe unto them that are with child, to them that give suck in those days. Pray that your flight be not in winter, neither on the Sabbath day. For then shall be great tribulation, such as never was since it was a nation to this same time, nor ever shall be. And except those days be shortened, there shall no flesh be saved. But for the elect's sake, those days shall be shortened. You notice verse 16 of this chapter. Then let them which be in Judea flee into the mountains, or flee into the wilderness, as pictured in these passages in the Old Testament we just got through giving you. So here we have the woman Israel having the experience of fleeing into the wilderness and into the mountains during the tribulation period, during the greatest tribulation that the world has ever seen or ever will see. So there's no question of what this woman represents national Israel. Then we read that she is great with child. She's going to bring forth a man-child. That also indicates that there are a smaller group of people symbolized by the man-child, smaller group than the woman herself, symbolized by the woman. Now then, as to the woman fleeing into the wilderness, this will literally take place when Antichrist breaks his 7 years covenant with Israel and determines to destroy the nation. He defeats Israel, and that's what's referred to in the 11th chapter of the book of Daniel, he shall enter into the glorious land, and many countries shall be overthrown. So there you have the fact that the Antichrist is going to defeat Israel in the middle of the last 7 years of this age, at which time Israel will be defeated and driven out of her country. Now then, as to the man-child, if the woman is Jewish, the man-child must also be Jewish. And this is what we read about in the 7th, 9th, and 12th, and 14th chapters of Revelation. In chapter 7, we read of an angel ascending from the east, having the seal of the living God. He cried to the first four trumpet judgment angels, saying, "Hurt not the earth, or the grass, or the trees, or the seas, till we have sealed the servants of our God in their forehead." I heard the number of them that were sealed, 144,000 of all the tribes of the children of Israel. So here you have 144,000 Jews from the nation of Israel who will be all alive and living in Palestine at that time when Antichrist is rising to power over the 10 kingdoms, and when he breaks his 7-year covenant with Israel, the 144,000, the godly in Israel, will be all translated to escape the wrath of the Antichrist that will be poured out upon Israel during the last 3.5 years of this age. The man-child is none other than this 144,000. There isn't any other group, there isn't any other thing that could possibly be symbolized by the man-child other than the 144,000. And you notice in this 7th chapter that they're being protected through the trumpet judgments. Special direction is given to the 5th and 6th trumpet judgment angels in chapter 9, verse 4. They were instructed, do not hurt those 144,000. Do not hurt the man-child. Do not hurt the Jews that are saved and who have the seal of God, the name of God, written on their foreheads. Thus, you see, throughout 6 judgments of these 7 trumpet judgments, Israel, the 144,000 of the godly in Israel, are being protected from the effects of these judgments. Then in chapter 12, 5, the 144,000 are caught up as the man-child. For we read in the 5th verse of the 12th chapter that the woman brought forth a man-child who was to rule all nations with a rod of iron, and her child was caught up to God and to his throne. Thus the man-child could not possibly be anything else but the 144,000 who were going to be brought out of Israel or translated out of Israel at that time to meet the Lord in the air and to go to heaven, where we read in chapter 14, verses 1-5, that they are in heaven, having been translated as the man-child. The 144,000 Jews in chapter 14 are the same 144,000 Jews of chapter 7. But they're being protected on earth, as we've seen in chapter 7 and 9, and now caught up to heaven as the man-child in chapter 12, where they are seen in heaven in chapter 14. Now, how did they get to heaven if they were not translated as the man-child? Or the man-child is Jewish, and the 144,000 are the only Jewish people that we find written and saved in the book, saved having their names written in the book of life from Daniel's people during this particular time. Revelation 14, we read of them in heaven then. Definitely in heaven, there is no question about it, because we read that they sung a song before the throne, and before the 24 elders, and before the 4 beasts, that no man could learn that song but the 144,000 who were redeemed from the earth. From the earth. No longer in the earth. From the earth. Therefore, they are without fault before the throne of God. That's in verse 5 of the 14th chapter. So 2 times in these first 5 verses of the 14th chapter of Revelation, the 144,000 Jews are in heaven, definitely pictured in heaven, singing a song before the throne, and therefore they are without fault before the throne of God. All right, there's no question then but what the 144,000 are symbolized by the man-child. We have certain other scriptures in the Old Testament that proves that. Isaiah 66, verses 7 and 8, we read, before her travail, before her pain, referring to the travail of Israel when the man-child is produced. She brought forth a man-child. There you have the word man-child used, just like you have in the 12th chapter of Revelation, verse 5. Then we have in Daniel 12:1, a scripture that proves that the 144,000 are still on earth until their translation in the middle of Daniel's 70th week, when Michael stands up and casts the devil and his angels out of heaven. In Revelation 12:7, we read, Michael and his angels fought, and the dragon fought and his angels. Neither was there any place found anymore in heaven. The great red dragon was cast out into the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. So you read of the casting out of the devil by Michael and his angels in Revelation 12:7 through 12. This is referred to in Daniel 12:1, where we read, at that time, that is at the time that Michael cast the devil and his angels out of heaven, at that time there will be a time of trouble such as never was since it was a nation to this same time, known or ever shall be, and at that time shall Michael stand up to protect the 144,000 from the devil. And at that time, we read, every one that shall be found written in the book of life among Daniel's people shall be delivered. Every one found written in the book. And Revelation 7 definitely tells us how many are found in the book of life among Daniel's people at that particular time. 144,000 living Israelites are referred to, and they will be translated to heaven to be ruling the nations with a rod of iron in the coming days. Now, the only reason some men take the 12th chapter of Revelation and associate it with Jesus Christ and his translation is that the man-child was going to rule the nations with a rod of iron, and they read in the second psalm that Christ is going to rule the nations with a rod of iron. So they have concluded by that the man-child of Revelation 12 is Jesus Christ. But it is foolish for us to bring the historical ascension of Jesus Christ, which took place 65 years before John saw the revelation, to bring it over in the very middle of these things, which must be after the churches. The man-child of Revelation 12 is going to rule the nations with a rod of iron. And the 149th Psalm plainly tells us that every saint is going to rule the nations with a rod of iron. What we read in this psalm, let a two-edged sword be in their hand to execute judgment upon the heathen. This honor have all the saints. In the second chapter of Revelation, verse 27, we read of the promise of Jesus that whoever overcomes of the church and of Israel are the church, I will give power to rule the nations with a rod of iron. Also, in the fifth chapter of the book of Revelation, verse 10, made us unto our God kings and priests, and we shall reign on the earth. Then in Revelation 24-6, we read even the tribulation saints of the future will also have power to rule the nations with a rod of iron. And anyone and everyone who has part in the first resurrection will be reigning with Jesus Christ in the days to come. Thus, the idea, just because the man-child is going to rule the nation with a rod of iron, does not prove at all that it refers to Jesus Christ or doesn't identify any particular person at all or persons. So we can understand then that if the 144,000 are translated as the man-child, then that they also are going to have power to rule the nation with a rod of iron. Now then, as to war in heaven, Michael and his angels fighting with the devil, and the devil and his angels fighting with Michael and the angels of God, we have this going to happen literally in the middle of this seven-year period at the time the catching up of the man-child. You notice in verses 3 and 4 that the dragon stands before the woman to devour her child, to destroy her child as soon as it was born. Now all these 144,000 are living Israelites, Not a one of them has died. Not a one of them is a dead person. All of them are living. That's why there's a possibility of the devil destroying every one of the 144,000 at the time that the woman brings forth the man-child. But God protects the man-child by translating everyone whose names are found written in the book of life among Daniel's people. He takes them to heaven, where they become part of the eternal rulers of God's eternal kingdom. So the war in heaven will be short-lived, the devil and his angels will be cast out, and the woman flees into the wilderness then. In verse 6, we read, where she hath a place prepared of God that should feed her 1,260 days. Then we read in verse 13, when the dragon saw that he was cast out to the earth, he persecuted the woman which had brought forth the man-child. And to the woman were given these two wings of a great eagle, that she might fly into the wilderness, or she might get safe in the wilderness, where she has a place prepared of God for a time, times, and a half a time from the face of the serpent. Then what happens? Well, the dragon casts out of his mouth water as a flood. Now, the dragon is a symbol of the devil, as pictured in verse 9 of this 12th chapter of Revelation. And the dragon casts out of his mouth, just like a dragon would be spewing out water, to swallow the woman. But the earth helps the woman, and the earth opens its mouth and swallows these armies and the Antichrist that are fleeing after these Israelites. And then we read the dragon is wroth. And when he saw he was cast out to the earth and he didn't get the man-child, he then turned on the woman to persecute the woman. The woman gets safe into the wilderness because of the earth opening its mouth and swallowing the armies of the Antichrist. And then the devil is exceedingly mad. And we read in verse 17 that he goes back to make war with the remnant of her seed, which have the commandments, to keep the commandments of God and have the testimony of Jesus Christ. Now then, a few statements concerning the tribulation. We not only have the facts in the scriptures that the woman represents national Israel, the main body of Israel that will flee from Judea when Antichrist breaks his covenant and defeats Israel, the armies of Israel, in the middle of this seven-year period. And at that time, the man-child, the every godly person in Israel who is saved and who is born again and whose names are in the book of life, they are translated to heaven at this particular time, leaving the main body of Israel and the remnant of the woman who do not flee into the wilderness, leaving them to suffer the consequences of not being in Christ at the time of the rapture of the man-child. For by the time the dragon comes back to make war with the remnant of the seed of the woman, he finds them saved. They've been saved in the meantime. And we read that they keep the commandments of God and have the testimony of Jesus Christ. So people are turning to God all through the tribulation period. Now, there's this much I want to make clear about the tribulation before going any further. That is, the tribulation that the Antichrist will cause cannot possibly be worldwide. That might shock some of you. You think that the tribulation is over here in the United States and over in all lands apart from Israel. Everywhere over the world, we think of the Antichrist ruling, but we will see in our next lecture that the Antichrist will not be a worldwide dictator, that he will rule only the 10 kingdoms inside the Roman Empire when he is supposed to be giving everybody a mark and when he is supposed to be killing off everybody in the world who doesn't worship him and who will not follow him. So we've got to be sensible with these facts. If the Antichrist is the ruler only of the 10 kingdoms inside of the Roman Empire, then we must recognize that the Antichrist cannot possibly cause tribulation in countries outside of his empire. He can only do what Caesar Augustus did, as we read in the second chapter of the book of Luke, verse 1. There went out a decree from Caesar Augustus that all the world should... Now it says all the world here, but it literally means the then known world, the empire of Caesar Augustus, the Roman Empire. And that's what we're dealing with when we deal with the Antichrist. Because in chapter 7 of Daniel, verses 7 and 8, and 23 and 24 verses, the same chapter, we have it plainly stated that the 10 kingdoms that the Antichrist will reign over in the future, for he has only 10 horns on him, just like the beast in Daniel has 10 horns on itself. So here we have plainly stated that the 10 horns are located inside the Roman Empire, not outside the Roman Empire. If we could just be literally simple with the Word of God and accept facts as we find them, we could clear ourselves of a lot of foolish thinking and foolish theories of every kind. We need to be cleansed of these things. The Bible teaches us that the Antichrist is not a worldwide dictator, therefore, and he will rule only the countries inside the Roman Empire, which in those days will be made up into 10 kingdoms. All right, now that itself proves to you that the tribulation that the Antichrist will cause cannot possibly be worldwide. And the time of trouble such as never was or never will be again, as pictured in Isaiah 66, 7 and 8, Daniel 12, 1, Matthew 24, 15 to 23, 22, and Daniel 9, 27, and other scriptures, that that tribulation itself is for Israel, is upon Israel in particular, and the nations surrounding Israel are the ones bringing those troubles to Israel. And in fact, Israel is defeated at this time and driven out of her own land. But Jesus Christ told them that they would go through such a time of trouble such as never was or never will be again. Daniel said the same thing. Jeremiah said the same thing when he said, "Wherefore do I see every man with his hands on his loins as a woman in travail?" Alas, it is the time of Jacob's trouble. Thank God you Christians are out of the world by this time. If you'll behave yourself and get in Christ and stay in Christ and die in the faith, there will be no question about your eternal welfare. You will be in heaven at least 3.5 years before this great tribulation will begin. And when it does begin, we've got to recognize that it is not worldwide. That it will only be inside the kingdom of the Antichrist. And not only do all these scriptures bear it out, that the Antichrist rules only the 10 kingdoms, but the fact is that if he does rule the 10 kingdoms only, then he cannot possibly cause the great tribulation for the Jews or the Gentiles all through the last 3.5 years of his reign. He cannot cause trouble for any country outside of his empire. Now, the very fact that the statements in Revelation bear this out confirms once and forever that idea. For example, we have in the 7 trumpets of Revelation only 1/3 of the earth being affected by fire, hail, mingled with blood, being cast out of heaven. And 1/3 of the trees is burned up, we read, in all green grass. And a burning star falls upon the waters. And 1/3 of the waters are made bitter. Many men die of the bitterness of the waters. And a great mountain falls upon the sea. And 1/3 of the sea, not the whole of every sea and every body of water all over the world, but just the Mediterranean Sea around which all these nations of the Antichrist are located, where all this great tribulation is going on. Just like God did not pour out his wrath upon the whole world when he dealt with Pharaoh and his nation because of their persecution of Israel, it's the same thing here. 1/3 of the sea is going to be turned to blood. 1/3 of the ships are going to be destroyed. 1/3 of the creatures in the sea will die. Then we read of 1/3 of the sun, moon, and stars stricken with darkness so that they will shine not for 1/3 part of them. Then we read in the trumpets of the 5th and 6th trumpets that men will be tormented day and night by a torment of a scorpion sting, and that only 1/3 of men will be destroyed at a certain hour of a certain day. You read that in the 9th chapter of the book of Revelation. Then when we come to the vials, the greatest judgments of all that God will pour out upon the earth, during which time the Antichrist is causing this great tribulation, we read that all the sea this time is turned to blood, and one-third of the rivers are made blood instead of made bitter as back in the third trumpet. And we read of the sun scorching men with fire instead of one-third of the sun, moon, and stars being stricken with darkness as back in the first 3.5 years of Daniel's 70th week. Then we read boils will come upon the kingdom of the Antichrist and upon his followers, we read, not upon everybody else, not upon the whole world, not upon countries that are not dominated by the kingdom of the Antichrist. Then we read of the river Euphrates being dried up. Now that doesn't mean that the Mississippi, the Missouri, and all the rivers on the earth will be dried up. Simply and only the river Euphrates preparing the way of the kings of the east. Then we read the cities of the nations will fall. All these things, you see, are more or less limited to a certain part of the earth. Therefore, God will not and cannot possibly be so different from what he has done, been in the past in dealing with people whom he has to deal with and leaving the people alone that do not need to be punished in any particular sense. God is the one pouring out these judgments of the vials and the trumpets, and he is the one that's going to see to it where they're going to be poured out and who's going to be affected by it. Some of these plagues say upon the kingdom of the Antichrist, and the sores will come upon the men who worship the Antichrist and worship the image of the beast. All these things are sensible and practical and easy to understand. If we'll just not bring the Antichrist in to be a whole world dictator, and he's going to do this and he's going to do that, the Bible doesn't say he will do. Just recognize that he is the one that's going to be the recipient of all these judgments sent down from above. So we can definitely predict and tell you in no uncertain terms that the tribulation mentioned in the Bible is not a worldwide event. Now as to the mark of the beast we read about in the 13th chapter of Revelation, the mark of the beast, the number of the beast, and the name of the beast. We read in the 16th verse of the 13th chapter, he causeth all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and bond, to receive a mark in the right hand or in the forehead, that no man might buy or sell, save he that had the mark of the beast or the name or the number of his name. Now here we have three brands that will be placed upon the followers of the Antichrist in those days during that great tribulation period. And remember again now, friend, this is only in the kingdom of the Antichrist and not in North and South America, not in Australia or New Zealand or New Guinea or Eastern Asia and Northern Europe, North Asia, a lot of South Africa, a lot of the world, which will not be dominated by the Antichrist. They will not have to take the mark of the beast in those lands because Antichrist does not control those lands. If anybody ever does take the mark of the beast in any land outside the kingdom of the Antichrist, it will be a voluntary thing on his part. And if he wants to, he can get on an airplane or a boat or something, and he can go over to the kingdom of the Antichrist if he wants to devote himself to the Antichrist and worship the Antichrist and take his mark and become one of the followers of the Antichrist. But if you'll stay in the countries outside the kingdom of the Antichrist, the Bible assures you that you will not have to go through those same judgments and same punishments that people will go through who live in the kingdom of the Antichrist and who voluntarily cooperate with the Antichrist and worship the Antichrist and take the mark of the beast or the name of the beast or the number of his name. Now you might say, what is the mark of the beast? I do not know. There isn't any man that knows. It is impossible for anybody to know. Why? Because the mark of the beast, what it is not given to us in the 13th chapter of Revelation, the 14th chapter of Revelation, the 20th chapter of Revelation, or no passage in Revelation or in any other book of the Bible. It just isn't listed for you. It isn't given. If it was there, we could all read the same thing. But since it is not there, it is utterly foolish for us to begin to speculate as to what the mark of the beast will be. We've had all kinds of foolishness in the name of prophecy, pointing out to you that the mark of the beast is the fascist on the American dime, or it's the Social Security number, or it's belonging to a labor union, or it's this, or it's that, or some other fool thing. If you'll just remember this one principle, as stated in Deuteronomy 29:29, where God said, "The secret things belong unto the Lord our God, but those things which are revealed belong unto us and unto our children forever, that we may know the Lord." You see, if we could be satisfied with what God has not revealed, and quit trying to speculate, quit trying to guess, and quit throwing yourself liable to judge God by doing so, you'd be a million times better off. You are warned in the last chapter of the book of Revelation itself that if any man adds to this book, I will add to him the plagues that are written in this book. If any man takes from the words of the book of this prophecy, I will take his part out of the book of life and out of the things that are written in the book. With such a stern warning like that, it would seem to me like some of us could learn to behave ourselves and not act so foolish and not be determined to add to the Bible and tell people what the mark of the beast is and what it's going to be. What does it make any difference what kind of opinion you have? It doesn't make any difference what opinion I have. I'm not going to even give you my opinion. I wouldn't even think about giving anybody an opinion of something that's not written. And we all should take that kind of an attitude. There isn't anybody then that will know what the mark of the beast will be. And we don't need to try to find out. The Antichrist, when he comes, will have intelligence enough to choose a certain mark or a brand that he wants placed on his followers. We have so much foolishness right now going on in the name of prophecy, such as they've got a big machine, a big computer called the Beast, and it's getting every name of everybody in the whole world. And Antichrist is going to have control of this beast or this machine. He's going to have the names of everybody in this machine. And you're going to be stamped with an invisible stamp in the right hand or in the forehead. And that only by a certain scanner can people tell whether you've got the mark of the beast. All that foolishness in the name of prophecy is going. This is just a new fad of literally dozens and dozens of fool fads we have had throughout the years concerning the mark of the beast and concerning the Antichrist. It is not up to us to decide what the mark of the beast is. We will not know until after the rapture of the church and until after the tribulation period, the great tribulation period begins, and after Antichrist has conquered the 10 kingdoms and has received power over the whole 10 kingdoms, and he has chosen himself what kind of a mark to put on his followers if they will worship him or not. Now that's all we know about the mark of the beast in the book of Revelation. Now as far as to the number of the beast is concerned, that literally means the numerical value of the letters in this man's name, whatever it will be, will equal 666. And on that basis, Bible scholars have already chosen 35 different antichrists for the public. They claim this is his name, this is the name of the antichrist, this is the name of the antichrist. They don't know any more about what the name of the Antichrist will be than anybody else. So we are here to warn you. You don't have to know what the mark of the beast will be or what the name of the beast will be. All kinds of names that would equal 666 if transliterated into Greek or Hebrew or Latin. Now as to the name of the beast, we don't know that. We don't know the name of the beast, or we don't know the anything but the numerical value of his name, and that is the only one of the three things that are stated in the book of Revelation itself. 666 is not the mark of the beast, that's the number of the beast. 666 is not the name of the beast, that's the numerical value of his name. So in those days, men will have a choice of choosing one of three things, either the mark of the beast, whatever it will be, the number of the beast, which we know now will be 666 in the English language, and the name of the beast, we don't know what that will be. Now as to Antichrist and Israel. In the middle of Daniel's 70th week, when the man-child is translated, Israel will be completely defeated, routed, and driven out of Israel into the country of Moab, Edom, and Ammon. That's stated in the book of Daniel, the 11th chapter, verses 40 to 43, where we read, the Antichrist will enter into the glorious land. Many countries shall be overthrown, but these shall escape out of his hands, even Edom and Moab and chief of the children of Ammon. So let's just settle it once and forever now that Israel will be defeated in the middle of the last 7 years of this age and will be driven out of her country until the end of this age, at which time, by some miraculous means, they get control of Jerusalem again. For when the Antichrist comes back from conquering Russia and Germany and Japan and China and these northern eastern countries outside of his 10 kingdoms, we read of the Antichrist then is going to try to exterminate the entire nation of Israel. And all God is permitting him to do is to bring the multitude of nations together in one place where God can take vengeance on all of them and destroy them all at one time, so that at the second coming of Jesus Christ, he can set up a kingdom in the world and rule forever and ever and ever. Now just a word concerning the 70th week of Daniel. That is the last 7 years of this age, mentioned in Daniel 9:27, where we read of the Antichrist making a covenant with Israel for 1 7 years, and in the middle of the 7 years, causing the sacrifice and the oblation to cease for the overspreading of abominations, he shall make it desolate even until the consummation of this age.